Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb?
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
So here we are, ladies and gentlemen, another edition of the Super Dumb Games podcast. This will be episode 6 out of 6 total episodes, and thank you so much for joining us for this one. I have a co-host here today. His name is Tanner. Tanner, why don't you say hello?
Hello, everyone.
I'm sorry, that was so meek and NPR-like. It threw me off.
Hello, everybody. We're here to entertain and have really great discussion about games, everybody.
So call us right now. Phones are open. 555.
Hey, everybody, did you know games have graphics? They also have sound, and you control them with buttons.
Wow. Tanner, you're a wealth of information, and I think that that's a good thing. With broadcasting, we really need to justify our jobs and get that extra, you know, $28 million a year to fund this sort of thing. And it's usually contributions from listeners like you that help out. So please join the pledge drive. It only takes a second. Just call us up, and you'll get a free tote bag.
There's always a tote bag.
That's all they have.
And like a Victor Borgia box set.
Yeah. It's the kind of shit that would make your grandparents happy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 6 of the Super Dumb Games podcast. As I said, I'm one of your hosts, Chris.
I'm your other host, Tanner.
This might be an abridged version of the show, and I apologize for that, but, you know, have cool, will travel. That's my motto. And
just a rambling rose.
That's right.
Out on desert roads.
Nah, I mean, I was out in Tanner's neck of the woods all of last week, and that was a wonderful thing, and I feel like we got minimal work accomplished, but hey, whatever.
Scant at best work.
We gave it a go, and that's all that counts.
There were some technical difficulties.
Yeah, unfortunately. There's certain things that didn't upload, and I literally had to run out of my house mid-upload to catch my flight, and so there was no way I could check on those things to make sure that there was 100% fidelity between what was being uploaded and what wasn't. So I arrived in town not even knowing if that stuff was up there. And lo and behold, some of it was, some of it wasn't. I believe we will have some Hunter's Trophy 2 commentary for you, which I think is going to be a treat.
Which has been teased for the past maybe 3 episodes. There is a video done. All I need to do is publish it. I'm hoping to get a second one done tonight. We have, I think, 3 total. They will be up. The commentary is recorded. They are happening, people. So I'll probably, because the podcast is going up on Monday, I might put up the video on Tuesday or Wednesday. And then my plan is also, I have purchased Amy for the PlayStation, well known to be one of the biggest, worst games of the past few years, a horror game about a mom and her child or something. And I am going to be doing an extreme. Nice. I'm going to see how long I can last with that game. So stay tuned for that.
That's exciting. I think still in the queue, we should have some, we did Dream TV. We got Crystal's Ponytail. There's 3 parts to that. And, did we ever do Spelunker? I don't remember if we...
No, we still haven't. That was one of the videos you uploaded, but it didn't look like any of those. I can check on it.
Okay.
We'll see. But yeah, we got all that coming up eventually on the YouTube channel. Make sure to just subscribe to the YouTube and you can find out when that shit publishes.
Yeah, especially given the fact that last week while I was there, one super productive thing we did was posted a video of your cat.
Yeah.
It's actually the hit of our channel right now. Did you look today to see if we got another hit?
We were cracking 30 views, people. It swept the internet by storm. And the backstory on that video is, prior to recording the Hunter's Trophy footage, I decided that we needed to listen to Fred Bear to get pumped. And it turned out the cat got most pumped of all.
Yeah. And as you can tell, based on how splayed she is on your lavish carpet and how little fuck she gives, that's about how much effort we put into the actual Hunter's Trophy 2 commentary. It's a hilarious video. A lot of people don't get it. I don't know what there is to... How else better to explain this to anyone? I don't think there's anything to really get Or maybe it's just one of those things, either you get it or you don't, and that's the end of it. I can't hold your hand through comedy, people. I can't do that.
You know, we just do things to make each other laugh. Yeah. And sometimes it just so happens there's only two people in the world who find something funny.
It's just that one of these days, the other person's going to be like Ricky Gervais, and he's going to propel us into stardom, and then you'll all pay. So, I should say last week, there wasn't much playing being done because Tanner has parental controls on his PS3 and his Xbox, and I can't, it doesn't really let me.
I was doing it for your safety.
I don't know what kind of filth you play, but in my house, we do not even need parental controls.
Those fucking, you know what, really interesting side note on that, my job requires me to learn about parental controls.
Oh, boy.
And I was hearing someone from Jumpstart Games, they're a big publisher of like kids software, and he said that when they've done surveys of parents, like 75% of all parents will say, yes, I want parental controls, I'm very happy, this is a feature I want. And then when it comes down to using it, no one ever uses them.
Do you think it's because maybe like the parents have a hard time even figuring out if they're implementing them correctly? Like, they worry that maybe they didn't exclude everything that they should. You know, or in other words, do you think it's because adults are dumb?
I think for a small portion, I think mainly it's parents like to appear mindful, but then when it comes down to it, they're like, eh, fuck it. Yeah. You know?
That's true. Well, speaking of games that are built for kids, this is what I wanted to bring up because you sort of caught me in the act 2 weeks ago. It's been an elephant in the room, honestly, with our friendship. You caught me playing an awful lot of a game on academicskillbuilders.com called...
Some would say a pathologically large amount of this game.
I was caught playing a game called Koala Cards. And, I love Koala Cards. It's one of my favorite games of 2013. I don't know how to explain.
It's tops of the list right now. Something may unseat it late in the year, but
we'll see. Grand Theft Auto couldn't do it.
Yeah, we're getting really close at the end of the year right now. Koala Cards.
So the way it happened, if I remember correctly, I was playing the game and I linked you on a lark because I thought you'd think it was funny that the leaderboard included me and then a good friend of ours putting in fake names, which is, you know, I think we jested about that in maybe episode 3 or maybe the second episode. But the reality is I play these games because I like to crush children and then put in really raunchy names into the top scores boxes and populate the top scores with just like insanely impossible to best scores. So in other words, on Koala Karts, you are a koala and you're in a cart, you're racing. And the game is essentially you're clicking, you have three choices. And the choices might show, it shows different amounts of dots. So it might show 9 dots or 6 dots or whatever. And then you'll see the text, I believe. I can't remember because I didn't get to play it this week. But you'll see the text or whatever it is that tells you, that says the word. And then you have to, there's a relationship between the numbers and the quantities that you see. So when the number is shown, you've got to match it up with the quantity. You got to be the game blows me away. It's built on a solid platform. It's everything I've wanted in a game. And honestly, I find myself enthralled with it to the point where after I realized that you kind of understood that I had an obsession with the game that goes beyond healthiness, I've caught myself in the middle of a race, like with my face almost pressed to my screen because I was trying to count the quantities and the number.
Trying to get an even better dominant performance over 5-year-olds.
I mean, this is actual competition here. Well, not between me and the 5-year-olds, but it's actual competition between myself and me because the game encourages you to get your score is based on time, not necessarily on like an actual score. There's no numeric score for how well you did technically. It's how quickly did you make it to the end. And the game, it's almost like, you know, if I had to equate it to something, it becomes like a Dance Dance Revolution type game where your eyes are only looking as things are lining up. And I didn't like Dance Dance Revolution. To me, that game was dumb versus this, where I'm actually looking at, you know, numbers and stuff. This game is a highly academic game, if you ask me. But
it's like a game in some near future when children become criminals or something, like some drug comes out that's for kids and it's like in candy and kids start to like murder people. This would be, and they had to create like a, like, then the moon was turned into a prison and they had to send kids to the moon. This would be the game those kid prisoners were playing. It's just meant to like fire off synapses in a brain and keep you active. It's not technically a game. It's a game insofar as Simon is a game in a way.
Look, I don't know if you're being diminutive or if you're giving me some praise here, because Simon's a difficult game. But I find the game to be enchanting. There's something about it that I love.
10 out of 10.
It's brilliant. And of course, you know, the strive to best one score. I think, though, let's put koala cards aside. In any game, there's a certain level of competition. And I think sometimes, I was never a very competitive gamer. I'm not even to this day. I don't like playing, like, I hate first-person shooters where it's me versus other people. I like co-op. That's my thing. But if I have to be competitive, the best person to be competitive against for me is always myself. So that's why the game...
Because there's no one better.
That's right. Well, I should have added the caveat that in first-person shooters, I win so easily. It's like flawless victories all the time. So I don't play them anymore. Plus, the International Gaming Tribunal has banned me from all FPS games. It's kind of like a great blackjack player walking into a Las Vegas casino. They know it.
That's how you are in koala cards at this point.
It's true, but they haven't banned me yet. So I'm just, I gotta get my fix. So
after you were telling me you're playing this game, I then clicked over to the game and got into a race. And I was just trying to figure out what in the hell was going on in the game. I couldn't quite figure out what the point was. And, you know, I'm looking down at my keyboard. Between the time the race starts, I look down at my keyboard and look up. There is one koala off on the horizon. Like, everyone else is bunched up at the beginning. And, you know, I'm fumbling around just pressing numbers trying to figure it out. Clearly, at that point, I'm on pace with 6 and 7 year olds playing this game. But one koala off in the distance, just highway into the danger zone.
It's such a
dominant performance.
It's a brilliant game. And I should give a shout out, because after the game was over with, I had, the big key was who can break 50 seconds. Who's
that in the koala cards community, that was the talk of the town.
Yeah, yeah. And
who's going to be the first?
I was the first. I got 49. And it was easy first. I went from maybe 50.23 seconds down to 49.54. It was like I crushed my best time, because in that game I was in the zone. I couldn't hit the wrong button. Even if you wanted me to, you could have thrown shit at me. I was a koala cart competitive. Yeah.
Sunglasses on, headband on, sweat dripping.
Can I be for real? I sweat when I play the game, because it is that competitive. You sometimes get into a game with there's this one kid I played against. His name was Nathan, and he was just so good. I think he might have been in 6th or 7th grade. He was really good at the thing. So anyway, Koala Cards is what I was playing. Check it out. We'll put a link up on the site, because I think it's worth even just checking out. And I think academicskillbuilders.com, they're actually providing a good service for kids. I more about that industry of gaming in terms of educational gaming. Maybe they're shit compared to the rest of the competition, but I like the games that they have to offer. It just so happens Koala Cards is right in my fucking wheelhouse. Wanna have fun.
Gentlemen, the world's hottest game news. First up, fan favorite, What's Droppin'? Pool Nation, October, Shocktober, the 18th, prepare to get your face melted by Pool Nation from publisher-developer Cherry Pop Games. Apparently this piece of shit came out on the 360 already. It is now slobbering all over the PC. Pool Nation, as branded, is the ultimate pool game. Listen, we've all played a million pool games. We all love pool games. This one is the ultimate pool game. It boasts 11 addictive game modes, including the adrenaline-pumping endurance, no other explanation, extensive career modes, and 7 exciting online modes, including the new speed pool. Not forgetting the box of tricks coming soon to Steam, giving you the ability to imagine, build, and share your most outlandish trick shots with the world, utilizing a variety of objects, including ramps, pikes, loop-the-loops, and speed-up strips. This is like Mousetrap combined with pool, people!
I kind of tuned out what you were saying. But as far as pool games go, I think there was like the Minnesota Fats game for Sega Genesis that was pretty good. And then Yahoo Pool. Those are the only two that have ever been on my radar.
Yeah, like when they say this is the ultimate pool game, they're basically trumping Yahoo Pool. Yeah. That's the high watermark. I imagine the CEO getting the development team together and like everyone's sitting around and then the CEO comes in really quietly. And he's got, like, a printout of the Yahoo Pool screen, opening screen, and he pastes it on the whiteboard. It's like, this is your target, people! We're gonna take this down! We're gonna create the ultimate pool game, where gameplay is king!
I mean, I'm not trying to say, like, there will never come a time when a pool game arrives that has redefined the genre, but Yahoo Pool is it's a pretty satisfying way to play online or just regular video game pool. What would you do outside of making apparently loopy landscapes of some kind? What would you do?
I know, which has nothing to do with pool.
No.
When you start putting loop-the-loops and speed-up strips on pool, it's...
To me, it's not funny or fun at all. It's
yeah.
It's just...
So what they end up doing, if you look this game up on Steam, they have a hilarious trailer. Every game I highlight on What's Droppin', basically I get sold by the ridiculous trailer and whatever canned music they play. So this one has some solid 90s techno in there. And what they've basically done is they've taken pool, but given it all kinds of fancy graphics that look a lot like computer graphics backgrounds I used to trade on America Online back in around 96. You know, some waterscape with like a magical glowing orb in the middle and a lens flare. That's basically the sort of graphical aesthetic they're now trying to apply to pool. So listen to this final paragraph. That's their big seller.
Okay.
The graphics are as shiny and pixel perfect as the physics, with beautiful locations, stunning exterior landscapes, eye-catching interiors, the ability to change the time of day and customize your game with a huge array of balls, cues, and table decals, creating your ideal pool playing environment.
So, okay.
Every detail has been considered and polished, from the super detailed table bays, I guess, and deforming cushions to the explosions of chalk dust from the Q-tip. This is pornographic!
But it doesn't address the core issue of whether or not it's... I don't give a shit if I'm playing in the tropics or on the outpost used in The Thing. I don't care where the pool is being played. I just want to play fucking pool.
Apparently they think you do. If you look at their screenshots, it looks like you're playing pool in Deus Ex Human Revolution or in Mass Effect. It's you're playing future pool, apparently.
Imagine, though, the poor guy who he's been waiting his whole life for the world's greatest pool game. This game comes out, and it's fully customizable, so this is exactly what he's been looking for. He starts playing it, and just as they say, like, you can find the world's best maps and all this stuff. Imagine this guy's life when it hits its zenith when he gets the right combination of felt on the pool table with the ambiance of, you know, whatever locale he decides to go with, plus time of day. I mean, as soon as he hits that sweet spot, his life is downhill from there.
Yeah, it's the pinnacle. And, you know, while he's doing all that, he's probably stroking. So next up, top sizzlers. This is the top stories as determined by your Super Dumb Games News Department, a massive team of people, professionals, journalism degrees from the top programs.
Yeah, say hi, News Department.
Shut up. Selected these stories. When you walk into our news department, all you can hear are typewriters. First up, Ellen Page says, and I am inclined to agree, The Last of Us ripped off my likeness.
Oh,
she says, and this is coming hot on the heels of, so Ellen Page is in Beyond Two Souls, which is the follow-up to Heavy Rain by Quantic Dream, and they paid her, and she acts in that, and of course it looks just like her, but she's also calling to task Naughty Dog for The Last of Us, saying, I guess I should be flattered that they ripped off my likeness, but I'm actually acting in a video game called Beyond Two Souls, so it was not appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
After delving further into the game's narrative over the past few months, we decided to modify Ellie's model to better reflect Ashley's personality and also resemble a slightly younger team more fitting to the story, says Naughty Dog's creative director, saying that, like, they kind of
acknowledged it.
Started with Ellen Page and then modified it. But if you look up a Last of Us cover shot or whatever, it is Ellen Page.
I saw this story, actually, and when I saw it, I was totally on her side. That's a strange thing, because when you get into that sort of design aesthetic, you know, somebody's calling the shots, but who's on quality assurance, quality control at this point? You know, where, and are they savvy enough to go, look, dude, I know that you really put a lot of hard work into this model, this character model, but is this Ellen Page that I'm looking at? Like, you know,
it's a really weird thing when you think about it, that like she has ownership in a way over her image and that you can't just poured it into a game and not give some kind of credit to the fact that you, and this has been happening a lot, like a lot of voice actors end up being the face of the characters in the game.
Yeah.
In a lot of instances.
But that kind of happens in a lot of animated movies in some way. Like, for instance, the genie of Aladdin kind of resembles Robin. I mean, maybe I'm looking into it too much, but I'm pretty sure that as they're designing the movie around the voice, they're kind of taking on the even the physical attributes.
What's fascinating to me too is that Ellen Page, like, this is, there's something to this that for some reason designers are fixated on Ellen Page as the image of femininity in their games. Like, she's got the kind of quirkiness that geeks love or something.
I think she's considered by a lot of people to have interesting femininity plus a bit of masculinity to her.
Yeah, there's like a little boyishness.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a tomboy, I think.
Yeah,
is the...
yeah.
In fact, the first movie that kind of shattered that was, in my mind, was Inception. There was that sort of, oh, she's actually more girlish in this movie than she's ever been.
So next story, this was inevitable. The 2DS, which if you don't know is Nintendo's modification of the 3DS into a sort of a tablet with two screens, not flippable at all. It's just a big box. It has been revealed that the 2DS, when taken apart, is just one giant screen with a plastic case over it to make it look like two screens. This thing costs like $200. This belongs on a shelf next to an Etch-a-Sketch. It's a screen with a plastic case above it trying to fool us into being two screens. This is stupid shit.
I love the idea of a company just trying to pull one over. I want to be there for that discussion more than the Ellen Page discussion. I want to be there for when the designers are like, hey, boss, check this out. All we got to do is just lay this thing on top.
Yes, but why not just make a tablet? Why do we care about two screens?
I don't know.
Who gives a shit?
I don't give a shit about much of the stuff that you read, honestly.
And you know what? EA doesn't give a shit about Shaq Fu. So breaking news, 20 years later, EA admits Shaq Fu was an abomination.
What?
So apparently in some ESPN video that got released, they're talking about the history of sports and sports video games. Shaq Fu gets brought up. And Sandy Sandoval, who I guess is like the Major Nelson of EA Sports or something. I've never heard of him. He's responsible for athlete outreach. He says, in reference to Shaq Fu, probably one of the worst games in EA history.
This is like the Catholic Church apologizing 400 years later for imprisoning Galileo. For, you know, it's like, we all knew that it was a travesty what you did, and only now are you acknowledging it to us.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. Like, this thing we all knew, like, finally someone breaks the silence and says, yeah, that was probably not the best. I mean, we had a guy fighting in basketball shorts.
Did anyone you knew like that game, though?
No.
Me neither.
No, no one did.
I mean, usually with a game, like, for instance, I can name a kid who liked Clay Fighter, and that's pretty rare, because Clay Fighter sucked.
Yeah, if you like Clay Fighter, reconsider your choices in life.
I mean, that's my one example of somebody who liked that game, but I couldn't name a single fucking kid who liked Shaq Fu at all.
It's one of those wonderful instances of old people trying to, like, figure out what the kids are into.
Right.
Like, well, they like Shaq. Let's make Shaq into a fighting guy. And right. They'll just eat it up. So, final story here. This is your hot off the wire. I've stared at this story for upwards of 5 minutes. I can't quite figure out what's happening here.
All right, let's dissect this.
So, press release. Isle of Skye, this is a place in Scotland, meets its, quote, virtual twin, end quote, world's first as Scottish Island teams up with Skylanders Swap Force.
Hold on. I was with you when you started with Isle of Skye, and then I got lost.
Yeah, and then the headline makes no sense. Spend some time on this. Do some wordsmithing. So, okay. Continuing, Visit Scotland, the Highland Council, and Activision Publishing today announced that the Isle of Skye in Scotland has virtual twinned, they keep using this word as if it makes sense to anyone.
Yeah, this is new.
With Skylands, the home of upcoming game Skylander Swap Force. Ugh. The stunning Scottish islands have been brought together at the virtual islands of Skylands to celebrate the month of Swaptober. What? And the launch of Skylander Swap Force. The virtual twinning marks the first time a video game world has been twinned with... What is twinning mean?
This is full of insider buzzwords, and guess what? The only insiders are the people who designed this game and wrote this press release. No one is clued in to what the fuck you're talking about at all.
I'm being dead serious. I'm confused. So the story has pictures,
okay,
of road signs that look, I swear to you, photoshopped. I don't even think these road signs exist. That say, welcome to the Isle of Skye, twinned with Skylands, the home of Skylander Swap Force. There's apparently a sign only in theory.
Okay.
And then there's another sign that, like, you know, one of those where it's Paris, Sydney, Berlin, and then up to Skylands. This is what twinning means? I can put a sign up somewhere and say I'm twinned with Gary, Indiana? Like, just put a sign with my name on it? I don't... Well, what?
I don't know. I don't think that... Because there's a whole program where cities get to, like, share sister,
yeah,
the
sister
cities program.
Yeah, which I understand those words.
That's, and it's an internationally run affair. It's not just whoever these fuckers are who are making this shit up. I don't know what's going on with the story.
So here's some details about how they're accomplishing this.
Okay.
Apparently, you have to sign an official deed to do this. But because Skylands isn't a real place, they signed a virtual deed. Basically meaning they didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's bound by no law.
Yeah.
What is this?
And this is all in a press release. That public relations people, if you're in the PR field, kill yourself. But they're making up this stuff. There's nothing real here. This is like fiction on top of fiction. And then a press release is sent out to get us excited about... Why would this get me excited about a video game?
The only thing that would be exciting is I'm pretty sure that on the Isle of Skye, there's maybe one or two castles that were used in Monty Python in the Holy Grail. I would be excited to see that in a virtual world.
There's that unrelated to them, you know? So then, okay, here are their other big features. An inaugural... Oh, no, I'm losing
my you're getting
voice.
Too fired up.
So to celebrate this, Washbuckler toured some of the island's most famous landmarks and visited the children at Portree Primary School.
Oh, that's so nice of them.
A swap takeover of the Isle of Skye website where Skylanders franchise fans worldwide can type swap on the homepage to watch the magic unfold.
So all three of them get front row seats. Yes. All three fans.
So this poor sad sack Washbuckler gets paraded through a Denny's in the Isle of Skye. And then they modify the Isle of Skye website to where you type in swap and something stupid happens. And this counts as twinning. There's a low bar here, almost a low bar, as low of a bar as pool games.
I'm baffled by that entire story. I honestly have no idea. You've spoken for all of 10 minutes about this. You almost lost your voice for the rest of your life. It almost left you forever because of how stupid and silly the story is.
I think it might be officially the dumbest news story that we've yet read on six episodes. So congratulations. Wait, this is one of my favorite parts of this.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait, there is no author. No one wanted to be identified with this one.
Of course not. Who would?
But congratulations, Isle of Skye and Activision, for coming up with the stupidest, dumbest PR stunt. And that is your news. So it's just Tanner here. Chris has left to go back to Detroit, and I'm recording this segment alone. It's clear now that he's left that my life is split into two halves, pre-Chris and post-Chris, like PC and, well, PC shit. Well, I'll work on that. But Chris's visit was really, well, to sum it up, transformational. You know, before Chris came to the Bay, I tell people all the time that I lived my life a quarter mile at a time. In fact, when I picked Chris up from the airport in my 2004 Cavalier SE, I said as much. I was like, Chris, we're on a highway to the danger zone. We both said, noice! Like, basically, in unison, it was awesome. Especially because, like, I peeled out and I think people saw and went, oh! But later, when we were at Buca di Beppo, Chris turned to me and was like, T. Higgs. I was like, yup. He's like, T-Bone, man. There's more to life than just quarter miles. And I'm like, dude, I don't know that I want to live a life that I can't measure in quarter miles. And he's like, I know, but dude, you can still roughly live in quarter miles, but there's something else to live for. Something beyond the quarter mile. And I was like, fuck, man. I'll believe it when I see it. And he's all like, believe it, man. So then I'm like, okay, man, so what is it? And I swear to you, he looks at me, takes off his shades, and just says, chicks. Just like that, chicks. Boom, man. Picture perfect. So that started it all. The craziest week of my life. How do I even sum it up? Have you ever gone to a nightclub's website and looked through their photo albums? It was like that, but the sickest 3D you can imagine, like Captain EO, but better. We owned the bay. Everywhere we went, I swear people were like, them's the dudes. We drank, ate, hit the clubs, watched UFC, touched dicks, smoked some weed, fucking cruised, almost got into a fight with these dudes, chilled, you know, everything. But the big moment, man, the pinnacle, was when we were walking the Golden Gate. Chris was lugging around this giant tub of LA Looks Maximum Hold Gel. He had to buy it about halfway through the week, you know, because it just ran out. And like when we were just about over the bridge, he turns to me, then looks at the ocean, says, Tanner. And here I knew it was serious because he said my name. So he says, Tanner, the only thing bigger than us right now is this fucking ocean. And I was like, I know, bro, but there's nothing we can do. He turns back to me, gets this crazy look in his eyes, and is like, we can do this. And he just chucks that LA Looks over the edge, like 32 ounces of max hold, just bam. It was a turning point for the whole Bay Area. It was like before that moment and after that moment. Unfortunately, the gel beefed it on the lower deck and never made it to the water. But man, it was still cathartic. So I'm going to finish up the show with another one of these chatty solo segments that we're going to start calling Close Quarters, where either me or Chris just tells a story. The last story I told was about Street Racer. This story is about a less dumb game, but one that came up in the last episode, and that's EverQuest. For me, EverQuest is one of those absolutely pinnacle experiences, one of the best games that I've ever played, even though I don't think it's a particularly perfect or brilliant game, but it goes beyond that. It holds a special place in my heart as the game that introduced me to online multiplayer play, and particularly massively multiplayer play. What I love about EverQuest was that, or what I did love about EverQuest was that it was wild and unpredictable. I kind of think of it back in its day as frontier gaming. It was damn hard. It was rugged. There was fear involved. Confusion. Transcendence. Individualism. But then also deep sociality that I don't see very often and didn't quite get as much in World of Warcraft or any of the other MMOs I played. The thing about EverQuest was it felt huge at the time, but now we know in retrospect that it was a relatively small player base. So even the most highly trafficked zones and areas, while they had people in them, there wasn't so many people. It was, you knew a lot of the people you came across, and you're constantly coming across the same people, and you depended on them and needed them to get things done. And as frustrating as that can be, it really lent a special quality to that game. And because it was so hard and everything felt so new because we were all learning a new style of game together, there's a feeling of constantly pushing the envelope, making discoveries at all costs. doing things in the world required this weird mix of hardened resolve and then skilled improvisation. In EverQuest, shit went horribly all the time. Like, on the regular, every play session, something just popped off and went bad. And in EverQuest, things going bad meant they went really bad. It could ruin your entire day. You'd lose experience. You'd lose hours of your life. So not only was it social in that you were doing things with other people, but you had this shared sense of pain and struggle that formed really deep bonds. And some of those bonds were formed with strangers, but they were also formed with friends. I created a guild, along with some real-life friends, called Clan Defiant. We were really small, barely had any members. It was basically our small group of friends and some various roguish loners that we picked up in the East Commonlands tunnel or whatever. We didn't accomplish much. We were too lazy, or, you know, we didn't have the time to do the hardcore raiding. It was just a way for us to share a chat channel and a common guild tag. But we did eventually organize a raid, and the place we targeted was a dungeon called Kaysera. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it was in the Field of Bones. It was part of the Ruins of Kunark expansion. So this was around mid-2000. And we planned this dungeon raid and got really excited about it. Like, this is going to be our first big event as a guild. And we only had enough people to form one group, essentially. And each of us, thankfully, played our part. I believe at that point in time, I was a druid. So I was kind of a secondary healer. We had Eric as our cleric, and John, who I was talking about in the Street Racer, close quarters. He was our enchanter, and Klopek, Chris, not this Chris, but another Chris, was a necromancer. We had a Shadow Knight. I can't remember his name. He wasn't part of our close group, but he was our tank. And then we had Byron, who is another one of our necromancers. And Byron is a true character. He's an obsessive gamer, to say the least. He's driven by being awesome at games and will sink time and painstaking effort into getting really good and understanding a game completely. And he definitely did that with EverQuest. I remember he had a character, and the character got really far. And then he had created a new character called Admetus, a necromancer. Byron almost always plays the undead, the kind of metal version of whatever classes were available. So he started this new necromancer. I remember I was level 45 or something. And in EverQuest, to get to level 45, it took me probably over a year. I quit the game after multiple years at level 50-something. It was an extraordinary amount of time to invest to raise a level of character. And I remember Byron created this necromancer and pledged that he would get up to our level. And I swear to you, every time I signed on, he would have another 10 levels. And before we knew it, he was our level again, and was in this Kaysera dungeon raid with us, of course. So we're all excited. We go into the dungeon. And even though we're not the most skilled players of all time, we're doing really well. We're progressing. We're getting through it. We're getting the right pulls. And in EverQuest, this stuff's tense. Because if you die in a dungeon, If your cleric dies as well, you're screwed. You've got to fight back through that dungeon with no gear and with the fear of losing your corpse, losing more experience. It was, I can't even believe that this could even pass muster as a legitimate design. It was painful, but it was also what made it so wonderful. So we're fighting through, we're doing really well, and we get to a point where there's a kind of calm. We're prepping the next room. We're all grouped together, healing up, meditating. You had to kind of get your hit points back and your spellcasting ability back. We're prepping to enter the next room. And then, as best as I can remember it, Byron's pet, he had a necromancer, so of course he had a skeleton. And this skeleton falls down a hole into the next level. And this dungeon kind of had a progression where it gets harder and harder the further you go. So his pet, we realize, as he lets us know, kind of nervously, but also sort of hilariously, that his pet has fallen in a hole and we don't know where the fuck it is. And anyone who's played EverQuest knows about trains, which is basically when someone aggroes in EverQuest, they aggro one mob or enemy, and then as they run for their fucking lives to the exit, they basically proceed to aggro every other enemy within range, and they create a massive train of just a flurry of death. And you'd be in a dungeon, and you'd hear someone say, like, train to exit! And a tidal wave of enemies would pour through, just laying waste to everything in their path. So we all knew, having played this game, that when that pet fell down that hole into whatever fucking hell that pet just fell into, we knew that this could eventually spell all of our doom. It was like hearing a trap get triggered, but then everything go quiet and you're just anticipating your end. But nothing seemed to happen. And we were kind of shocked, like, okay, nothing seems to be going on. But so Byron has this brilliant idea that he's going to check it out. And there was this awesome spell in EverQuest called the Eye of Zom that was basically a scout that you could... It was this giant eye that you could send out, and when you cast it, you could look through that eye. And his brilliant idea was to send out that eye and send it down the hole and figure out what the fuck happened to the pet. And you know what? Now that I'm thinking about this, Byron was actually playing his wizard, and that's why he had that spell. It was Chris... or Klopek's pet that fell down that hole. It wasn't Byron's. It's funny how you start to... You don't think about something for a while, and then you start to recall it, and it all gets really clear. So Byron's playing his wizard. He throws his stupid-ass eye down this hole. And Byron's the kind of person... He takes games really seriously, but he's always up for... the crazy shit. And he knew what... sending that pet down there would mean, or sending that eye down there would mean. So he sends the eye down that fucking hole and informs us that the pet and now his eye is in a pit of spiders. And the last thing he sees before that eye gets destroyed is the spiders rallying. And he's basically like, prepare yourselves, because shit's about to get real. And very quickly afterwards, all of the shit in that room comes barreling up and just swarms us as we're camped and sitting, and just takes us completely unaware. It was like that scene in the first Lord of the Rings when they're in that room and they see that all the dwarves are dead, and then something gets dropped down that hole and those goblins just pour in and a chaotic battle ensues. The difference was we didn't win this battle. We completely wiped, and that basically spelled the end of that dungeon raid. It was absolutely hilarious. I haven't laughed that hard very often in games, but we are all dying and all laughing at such a stupid, dumb way to end a dungeon. But that was what was wonderful about EverQuest. So Kaesara, by any measure of success, was essentially a disaster. Yet what I fixate about it is it remains one of those touchstones for me and for that group of friends. And whenever I see those guys, it inevitably comes up. Someone brings it up. And since then, I've played a lot of WoW, gone through dungeons and gotten to the end. But the thing is, I barely remember any of those experiences. And if we had cleared out Kaesara and gotten great loot, we probably wouldn't be talking about it today. There's no social story in that. It's just fleeting digital ephemera. It's just getting a new item. Fuck loot. It's like we often hear or read about games framed as these power fantasies all about making us feel awesome, like champions. But when it comes down to it, some of the best parts of games are the broken parts. The fuck-ups, the dumb stuff, the disasters. Games are great because they can be great even when they or we fail. And especially when we fail with friends. So that's your show. Check us out at www.superdumbgames.com. Subscribe to all the links on the left to get our updates. Feel free to email us at superdumbgames@gmail.com with suggestions for time trials, specific nostalgic topics to discuss, or fake game titles that we could do the Just Spitballing segment. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Dumb games.